DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Assumpta Latus. Remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Please leave us a comment and share the link.
Coming up, voters in northeastern Nigeria eager to cast their vote despite the Boko Haram threat. However, some critics remain skeptical.
Very unlikely that elections will be held in some local government in northern Borno in particular. As an example, in places like Damasak, there is an ongoing armed conflict at the moment.
And Cameroon opposition leader Maurice Kamto and 150 others charged with rebellion and hostility to the homeland. We will hear what his supporters think about it.
They are handling political issues with impunity in this country. And politics in Cameroon is a sham.
It's very glaring that this man has become a political threat to the political class of our country.
Plus, U.S. calls on Europe to withdraw from Iran nuclear deal.
We have that and much more, but first let's hear other news happening around the globe.
DW News.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Nigeria's main opposition party alleged Thursday that more than 1 million ghost voters are still registered ahead of Saturday's presidential election. Uchi Secondus, chairman of the opposition People's Democratic Party, claimed the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, conspired to rig the elections.
As we prepare for the general elections on Saturday, multiple intelligence sources show that the Independent National Electoral Commission have concluded plans to manipulate the outcome of Saturday's election by deliberately corrupting the INEC voters register to induce voters' suppression in PDP stronghold.
The Electoral Commission says that 84 million people are registered to vote in a country of 190 million. They did not, however, respond to the accusations. In Egypt, the country's parliament has overwhelmingly approved constitutional changes to remove term limits for President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, potentially allowing him to stay in office beyond his current term, which ends in 2022. Once approved by lawmakers, the constitutional amendment would have to be put to a national referendum. Ali Abdel Al, parliament speaker, praised the proposal.
We should always look to the Constitution as if it is, and as the High Constitutional Court has said it is, in truth, a developing and living document which will never stop moving forward.
Should the proposed amendments be adopted, el-Sisi could run for two more terms and stay in power until 2034. South Africa's utility giant Eskom extended power cuts for the fifth consecutive day on Thursday. The company, which was declared insolvent by the government and forecasted to collapse by April, is buried in nearly 25 billion euros in debt. The outage comes 3 months away from elections, which could pose a threat to President Cyril Ramaphosa and the ruling ANC party. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. A Kenyan court on Thursday sentenced a former senior police officer to death for killing a detainee in his custody. The court found overwhelming evidence against the former officer for the murder of Martin Kume, who was found dead in his Nairobi cell in 2013. The police officer has 14 days to appeal his conviction. While the death penalty is still in place in Kenya, the last execution took place over 30 years ago. Most death sentences are commuted. 23 illegal miners have died in Zimbabwe after a mine collapsed on Tuesday and flooded with water. Police said rescue efforts are underway to save the other miners and to retrieve the bodies, but rising waters have made the operation difficult. And finally, a Turkish court has released a German-Turkish social worker from detention after he was arrested in Istanbul 10 months ago. The social worker is to be released pending the outcome of his April trial. The Turkish government accused him of being a member of a terrorist organization. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome back to Africa Link. We are live from Bonn, Germany, and your hosts for today's show. It's me, Assumpta Latosip, but I'm not alone here.
Of course, you're with me, Zipporah Nyambura, and it's a pleasure to welcome all of you listening to us on our Facebook page there. Hassan Conte says he's watching live from Kuwait, all the way from Kuwait. Welcome to the program. Monju Ironius is saying hello, and we have many more people listening to us from Cameroon there. We have, I'm losing the names, Abaka Musa says he's listening from Nigeria. Tell us what you think, because you have a lot for you today.
Right. We begin the program in Nigeria. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for an attack on the convoy of a Borno State governor who was headed to a rally ahead of Saturday's presidential election.
Although voters are eager to cast their votes, the security challenges caused by Boko Haram are immense. DW's Thomas Mosh visited Maiduguri, and here is his report presented by Aliyu Abdullahi.
The attack on Borno State Governor Kashim Shettima is one of the many that has rocked the Borno State. The Islamic State said 42 people had been killed, but official sources say between 3 and 10 people were killed. Boko Haram has waged years of violence in the northeast, which has killed around 30,000 people and forced about 2 million to leave their homes. Those living in Maiduguri camps hope the situation will calm down after the elections, and they can then return to their homes. Meanwhile, they still have the chance to vote in polling stations that will open in refugee camps.
I will vote for Buhari because I know he wants to help ordinary people. He is also a patriot and has changed much.
I'm very angry because I could not get my voting card. Of course I wanted to vote for Buhari. I've been here 3 times but still haven't gotten it.
I wish that Buhari and our new governor here in Borno help to end the Boko Haram crisis once and for all. And I would also like to ask the government to intervene in our condition.
Nigeria's security forces are seeking to alleviate any doubts about whether elections in Borno can be conducted peacefully. According to Abdullahi Ibrahim, head of Nigerian Security and Civil Defense Corps, they will work along with the police and the army to secure an estimated 4,000 polling stations in the state.
The heat is now turned on Boko Haram because with the credible intelligence which we gather, we are now mounting much pressure on them. That's why you can see within Maiduguri, there's relative peace and also its environment. That's why we are going to conduct, or INEC is going to conduct election in all the local governments in the state.
However, some critics like Kabir Adam, is a security expert in the region, remains skeptical.
It's very unlikely that elections will be held in some local government in northern Borno in particular. As an example, in places like Damasak, Mubar, it's very, very unlikely. There is an ongoing armed conflict at the moment.
Locals in the area have now formed up a civil defense forces, calling for peace during the elections. Ahmed Shehu is leading the campaign.
They also know those people that even rigged the election. They know those people that if you see them close to the ballot board, you know what is going to happen in that community.
President Buhari vowed to defeat Boko Haram when he became president in 2015, but they remain a threat as he seeks a second term. His top challenger, Atiku Abubakar, blames his opponent, Buhari, for failing to address insecurity during his first tenure in office.
Aliyu Abdullahi, with that report by Thomas Mosh. Now, we do have some comments from you, our listeners. I have one from Emenika, Chris. You're saying, as far as that man, I think you're talking about President Buhari, is concerned, the election has already been rigged, so vote won't count. He's so desperate and would do everything possible to stay in power. Oh, my God.
From his Na, he also has the same opinion, and he says on Sunday, Buhari will be addressed as former president of Nigeria. That is your opinion. You can read more on these stories and more on our website at dw.com. We now move on to other stories making headlines globally. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence has called on Europe to withdraw from the landmark 2015 Iran nuclear deal and stop efforts, he said, are designed to evade U.S. sanctions. Pence accuses Iran of being the world's greatest state sponsor of terrorism.
He lamented that Britain, France, and Germany have created a special financial mechanism that Washington believes is aimed at breaking tough U.S. sanctions on Iran. What Germany's reaction has been to this accusation, here is our DW's political correspondent, Hans Brandt.
No, there have been no reactions in the last half hour or so since Mike Pence made that statement. But we have to remember, as we heard earlier, that this conference where he's speaking in Warsaw is controversial in itself. Some people here in Germany, especially on the left of the political spectrum, are describing the conference as a warmongering gathering, trying to start a war against Iran, I presume. And certainly the German government and various other European governments in Western Europe mostly are not attending this conference at a very high-ranking level. They've only sent junior ministers to attend the conference. So the whole setup is controversial, and it can be expected that Germany will continue to defend this deal with Iran and will continue to keep its stance that communications channels with the Iranian side need to be kept open.
That is DW's political correspondent Hans Brandt.
And now to Africa again. Cameroon's main opposition leader, Maurice Kamto, has been charged with rebellion, insurrection and hostility to the homeland. The president of the Movement for the Rebirth of Cameroon, MRC opposition party, and 150 others were charged by a military court in Yaounde.
Kamto says his win in last month's election was stolen by President Biya and has since rallied his supporters against the long-serving leader. To expound further on the latest developments, I talked to our correspondent Jean-Marie Ngong-Song in Bamenda. To start off, he tells us what the charges against Kamto mean.
The charge in Cameroon, they're applying the law on anti-terrorism law that was enacted early 2009 in Cameroon. And once you are charged with this anti-terrorism law, you stand the risk receiving a death sentence or a life imprisonment in Cameroon. At the shortest you can have is 15 years imprisonment. We have seen the likes of Mancho BBC that have been sentenced under this anti-terrorism law, and the least he received was 11 years imprisonment.
Has the opposition spelled out what they plan to do next after this charge?
The militants of MRC has promised future protest. They have also tried to mobilize support. They are also announcing the institutionalization of ghost towns to protest what they call electoral holdup. We also hear that the president of the Cameroon People's Party, the CPP, Edith Kabanwala, will certainly be swearing in to join forces with the militants of the MRC tomorrow in Douala to protest against the arrest of their leader. And because we are talking about Maurice Kamto, who declared himself winner of last presidential election in Cameroon, some of his militants actually addressed him as Mr. President.
Kamto has a lot of support in the English-speaking region. What's the general feeling among the people there?
So far, his arrest has actually dampened the spirits of many who have looked up to him. Okay, Zipporah, let's listen to what people in Bamenda think about the charges read out on Maurice Kamto.
Is it because he simply declared himself as winner of the 2018 presidential election in Cameroon, that, or because he just simply stood up to still against the electoral holdup? I just think that the government is so confused.
They are handling political issues with impunity in this country. There's no freedom to express yourself, protest, and politics in Cameroon is a sham.
It's very glaring that this man has become a political threat to the political class of our country. And nobody for sure in power will want to accept any threat like that of Kamto.
Those are voices of Cameroonians expressing their opinions following charges against opposition leader Maurice Kamto. And there's someone listening to us live there, and that is Prosperity J. And he's commenting and saying Cameroon is a lawless country, but that is his opinion. You can also contribute right there on our Facebook page.
Well, I have another one from Auntie Riley. You're saying that, you are, talking about MRSC party of Professor Kamto. You say that it's selfish and trying to fight beer alone without joining forces. So probably you would want him to do, to join forces and fight the fight together and not alone, right? Well, okay, then keep tuned. Great to have you back to Africa Link and your hosts for today. It's me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. I'd like to acknowledge you. They are listening to us, even some people from Malaysia. Mayor King says he's listening from Malaysia. And we have Ajibo Sambron talking about Nigeria. He's saying Buhari must go. And we have Sluv Clues. I cannot mention all the names, but thank you for your company. We want to debate and hear what you think about these stories we are covering.
Yes, and we are having lots of stories still to come. Though, what happened to women who are bold, self-confident and assertive and live in a patriarchal society?
People mistaking those three things as being arrogant, as being disrespectful, and sometimes it's a big challenge for us women in politics.
Okay, but first let's talk about prophets. Over the past few weeks, controversial Pastor Shepherd Bushiri has made headlines that have put him and his church work in the spotlight. Bushiri is the founder and leader of the Enlightened Christian Gathering, a church which has a wide following across the globe.
Despite his arrest on charges of money laundering, Prophet Bushiri, who is also known as Major One, enjoys a massive support from his followers. He's also believed to be one of the wealthiest pastors in Africa and one of the richest men in Malawi, where he was born and raised. Chimamwe Padata compiled and sent this report.
Prophet Shepherd Bushiri grew up in Mzuzu, a city in northern Malawi. And to date, he owns 4 private jets, luxurious fleet of vehicles. He's a man who claims to have cured people with various ailments, including HIV. His luxurious life has drawn much of attention as he is believed to be one of the richest prophets in Africa with a massive following. Last week, some of the congregants of the Enlightened Christian Gathering, ECG, in Malawi marched to South African High Commission in solidarity with their founder and head of their church. Bushiri, who together with his wife were appealing in court in South Africa for charges of fraud and money laundering. They demanded that authorities in Pretoria must stop ill-treating the embattled preacher, while their counterparts held a similar march in South Africa. In Malawi, Robert Nkwezalamba, an activist, led the grouping.
He deserved respect, not the humiliating manner where he went through having to be handcuffed and bundled into vehicles as if he was a terrorist or a criminal.
Reports say Bushiri first entered South Africa in September 2009, but only acquired permanent residence in May 2016. His church has been active in South Africa since 2012. Many have questioned Bushiri's amassing of vast wealth within a short period of time, but the preacher has on several instances brushed aside such suspicions, claiming that apart from being a preacher, he's also a businessman running a global investment company, Shepherd Bushiri Investments, with interests in mining, real estate, and other entrepreneurial pursuits. Other social media commentators, however, feel that governments should accord full rights to its citizens in disregard of one's religious affiliation.
The fact that the church is growing fast perhaps simply means that it is meeting the expectations of a lot of Christians or indeed potential followers. And personally, I do not see any reason why anybody should be suspicious about it.
In the fraud and money laundering case, the couple has hired South Africa's top advocate, Barry Rocks, and their next court's appearance is 10th May this year. Many South Africans have in the past days been mocking the embattled prophet in social media sites for hiring the most expensive defense advocate.
Well, they can manage that. Chimoyeme Padata reporting on Bushiri, and we do have lots of comments about
for
this
sure.
story. The first one, and which is actually, I really like it, it's from Blair Mubele. You're saying three categories of people you can't advise. The first one is the man who suddenly becomes rich. The second one is a lady in love. And the third one is the follower of a prophet.
I love that. Oh, that, I don't know what can wrap up that much better.
I know.
But we have another good one here. And he says, he's supporting Bushiri. Listen to this. Prince Tom says, God is not poor, nor his kingdom. God's sons and daughters cannot be poor.
Okay. So we should be all of us rich, right?
Yeah.
U-Zone. Let's go to Nigeria again now and have a look at the very first voters who will cast their votes for the first time on Saturday. These young ones have not only excitement about exercising their rights to vote, but also have frustrations to know who could be the best person to lead their country for the next 4 years. The irony is, although a half of registered voters are young people, the two top candidates in Nigeria are in their 70s and have been working in the government for years.
Yeah, that would mean Saturday's vote offers little hope of change for young people in a country where nearly a quarter of the workforce is unemployed. From Kaduna, our correspondent Zahradin Umar went out and about to understand what first-time voters expect from this coming election.
20-year-old Hadiza Ibrahim is washing dishes in her student accommodation. She's a student at Federal College of Education in Zaria, Kaduna State, Nigeria. Since 2017, the time she collected her first voter's card, she has never had an opportunity to exercise her right. She tells me her feelings as she prepares to vote for the first time.
I am very happy to reach this level. I now feel that I am equal to the task. I can go out and vote for my preferred candidate. I always love to see people queuing to vote for their chosen candidates. I am glad today I will be one of them.
Hadiza is among Nigeria's young and fast-growing population. More than 15 million out of 84 million registered voters in the country are youngsters who have never voted for political leaders in their lifetime. Hadiza and her age mates are, however, a bit irritated because she will have to choose someone who is almost three times her age. President Muhammadu Buhari, 76, has spent months of his time overseas for medical treatment. His top challenger, Atiku Abubakar, is 72. Between them, they have to run for president nine times. Nevertheless, 18-year-old Sani Halilu is determined to go and vote and hopes that his vote brings about good leaders.
I am happy that we are practicing democracy. I was told during military rule there was no election, it was imposition. In the previous election, I had my preferred candidates, but I didn't vote them because I was not eligible. To God be the glory, I am now an eligible voter.
This Saturday's presidential election is the sixth since Nigeria became a democratic country in 1999. In all these elections, politicians are alleged to sponsor youths to snatch ballot boxes, election materials, and cause violence just to pave way for electoral misconduct. But for 23-year-old Ibrahim Abdullahi, who has just received his first voter's card, says he will in future not allow politicians to use him to achieve their goal.
I hope this election will be peaceful during and after voting. I am calling on all Nigerians to give their maximum cooperation because this is our country. Whatever happens will affect everyone. So we should be calm and make sure we defend our votes. God has predestined what is going to happen.
This report was compiled by Zahiruddin Umar. Looks like this is going to be kind of a trend. I mean, having presidents over 70s in many African countries.
It's unbelievable. 82, the oldest, I don't know, 90.
I know. Yeah, okay. Well.
Speaking out.
In Speaking Out this week, we talk about patriarchal society and women. Talkative, bold, self-confidence and assertive women in Northern Ghana and other patriarchal societies have had time to put into practice their political ambitions. They are usually called names or even perceived as arrogant or disrespectful.
This has made many women coil back on their quest for leadership positions. As our correspondent in Northern Ghana reports, it has also prevented them from taking up leadership challenges despite the country's quota system for women.
We want the government to change Mariam Idrisu for us. We don't want her to be our MC again. We don't want her to be in the party.
That is an excerpt from those calling on the president to sack a woman chief executive at Sanargu Municipal Assembly. They argue she is disrespectful to the people. But Mariam Idrisu, the woman in the center of the issue, says her accusers are just misconstruing her traits. Mariam Idrisu started the job in 2017 when she was nominated by the president, Nana Akufo-Addo. But her nomination didn't go down well with some angry MPP youth. Almost 2 years down the road, Idrisu is still facing some resistance while pursuing her political career.
When you have found yourself, like myself, an MC, leading and governing people, and I seem assertive, I seem bold, I seem confident, people mistaking those three things as being arrogant, as being disrespectful, and sometimes it's a big challenge for us women in politics.
Just like her male counterparts who possesses similar traits and are praised for that, Mariam Idrisu says some of her constituents think different of her.
You need these characteristics before you can fit into any leadership position as a woman, just as a man.
The story of Mariam Idrisu cut across the country. Women leaders are stereotyped and criticized, sometimes for mere reasons. Recent statistics show that only 7% of women are elected into local assemblies in Ghana. The reasons are blamed on society's perceptions about who a woman is and the masculine nature of Ghana's political contest, says Kausada Abubakari, a gender activist in Tamale.
If you give out orders, I need this to be done, then it tends to be like she's commanding us, she's disrespectful. Because they are not really seeing the leader that you are, they are seeing the woman that you are. And that is basically what is challenging women in leadership in this country.
The government is trying to put more women in positions by bringing them to the forefront to serve, but the effort is moving at snail pace. Out of 275 members of parliamentarians in Ghana, only 35 are women. Madam Bushra Al-Hassan heads the Department of Gender, Women and Children in the Northern Region. And she thinks the best thing is to push for the Affirmative Action Bill to be made a law.
We don't have anything to rely on and say, okay, fine, this is what has been put in place and so you must adhere to it. We don't have that thing for now. But the Affirmative Action Bill has given a percentage that at least 40% of all appointments should be women, so that we have 40% women representation in leadership positions. But then we are pushing for the commitment of our government to make sure that these things come to reality.
Activist Kausada Abubakari isn't surprised about the attitude of the society she finds herself in.
So you see a lot of women really trying to be submissive, even though they are in leadership. Then they end up not performing, or they end up being taken advantage of by the very society that expects that behavior from them. So it becomes very dicey. And even very sadly, it's how it affects their marital homes.
For now, women's quest to finding common ground with men in the Ghanaian society is still a huge step ahead due to a deep-seated cultural beliefs.
Maxwell Souk reporting from Tamale, northern Ghana. Well, this is quite shocking, especially right now when we talk about gender equality or gender inequality in everywhere, and in politics and economics, in tech, in everything, everywhere.
Yes, but assumed we also have countries like Rwanda, Ethiopia, which have set precedents in Africa, so it can be done for sure.
Okay, so this is what we had time for today, and I'm Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Thank you for listening.
DW, made for mind.